back to the Cleared Bit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things in Cornwall, England today?
Very good, Graham. Yeah, thank you very much.
So this is the Wiretaps podcast for Monday, December 29th, and last week was kind of a holiday week for many, so it was relatively calm, or I expected it to be, but I was actually blown away by the number of DecisionWire entries that came into the site. And I wanted to, if you're listening and you're one of the people who posted a DecisionWire entry, I wanted to thank you. Alex and I love to see these DecisionWire entries, and we're actually, you know, we're trying to keep up with them and give advice where people are, you know, indicating that they're undecided. But I also want to encourage, you know, members of the site to just chime in. Everyone has a point of view, and every point of view is valid. But Alex, yeah, I don't know if you were surprised, but I was just surprised by the wave of DecisionWire activity, and it's always cool to see, you know, where people are getting in and how much scholarship they're getting, all that stuff.
Yeah, no, it's exciting, and you know, a few candidates having multiple sort of options to consider, some not always straightforward, and we'll get to discuss one of those a little bit later in this show. But yeah, no, it's great. It's great. I mean, again, and I've said this before, this is sort of the favorite time of year for me, sort of as the rounds sort of start to yield results, and then people's sort of conversations start to switch and change a little bit. No, it's very exciting.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that we've, you know, tried to put up some content that we thought would be useful for those who are starting to lean in the direction of round two as those deadlines are coming. So we've got a Harvard Business School admissions director Q&A we did with Chad Losey up on the site for people to read. And we also have a really great admissions tip about round one rejection reflections. And so it's just, you know, helpful in terms of people who are gearing up to kind of take a new approach in round two, or maybe even think about next year. So those are up on the site. Alex, what does this week have in store for us? Because I know now we're kind of, you know, the calendar's going to turn. It's going to be, you know, a new year. And so what, right away, there are going to be some deadlines, right?
Yeah, the back end of this week, we'll start seeing a few of the top programs with their sort of second round two deadlines. I think amongst those is London Business School, Rice-Jones. Columbia has its sort of merit fellowship deadline for its rolling admissions. So a quiet, I would say a quiet introduction to the round two busyness this week. Surely next week we'll see lots and lots of deadlines. So the point is, if you're applying in round two, you're busy at this juncture, finishing up those apps, chasing down those recommenders, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, one thing I would say is I know it's tempting for those round two applicants to be out celebrating maybe, you know, later this week for the new year. But yeah, just obviously to the extent that you can get those applications wrapped up or near to it before you celebrate, I think the celebration will be all the more sweet if you can get some of that stuff out of the way. Because as Alex mentioned, next week, there's just a slew of deadlines. Speaking of the holidays, though, Alex, I wanted to mention that you and I, it seems like we got a handful of Christmas gifts from our listeners in the form of reviews and ratings for the podcast, which I was really pleasantly surprised by. And I just wanted to kind of read a couple of quick quotes. So we have one that the review says, an invaluable resource for gaining admission to top programs. And it was left by YJ_16. And this person said that Graham and Alex do an excellent job at highlighting what the AdCom looks for in applicant profiles. And the person says, listening to this podcast not only became addictive, but pushed me to iteratively self-examine my story and develop a very strong application. I've been admitted to 3 out of the 4 top 10 programs, including Harvard and Wharton, and I attribute a substantial portion of my success to things I learned on this podcast and Clear Admits Wires. So that's just so wonderful to hear that. And I know we're always asking people to put in those reviews, but really appreciate it. They, you know, there's another one that I'll just read the title. The person says, pithy, insightful, and dare I say, fun for the podcast. So
nice.
Yeah, that was kind of nice to see. And that was from Sean Sturd is the name of the reviewer there. Another title was Addicting for MBA Hopefuls. And, you know, the person said they started listening to the episodes in earnest while applying in round one before getting sucked into our Wiretaps format. And this is someone who's actually featured in an episode of Wiretaps and has really enjoyed the podcast. Now, there is one sort of critique that I thought I would share, just because I think we want to be, you know, open to all comers. And this person said, let's see. Yeah, so this person left a review that said, most insightful source of information for MBA hopefuls, left by BP Wagner 96. And they said they listen to the podcast every week to continuously learn and think about the MBA. I love Wiretaps, blah, blah, blah. So, but the criticism they had is they said, my only con is that the hosts seem to lean a bit much on their tiered ranking system. I would think that just because someone can get into Harvard and Stanford doesn't mean that they should necessarily go there. But maybe I'm wrong. Overall, I love the podcast. So thanks for that review. And that's actually interesting feedback. I thought it was helpful to see that. And that is a good point. I mean, obviously, we do focus on tiers and, you know, where schools fall in the rankings and things. And it is true. Sometimes, you know, maybe the best school for someone isn't the best school that they could have gotten into, but a school that's the right fit for them, right? So that's important feedback. So, Alex, I don't know if you had anything to do with these reviews or, you know, where they came from, but it's just nice to have so many reviews come in at once. Yeah. And
I've been busy writing lots of reviews. Yeah.
No, but in all seriousness, it's great to hear this stuff.
No, it's fantastic. I mean, quite honestly, it's been, you know, trying to find the right format to share. You know, I think we have pretty decent sort of foundation of knowledge and experience in this industry, and it's great to see some of that feedback that, you know, people are benefiting from what we're saying. Quite honestly, you know, whilst I think the folks we feature on Wiretap should have some direct benefit, I think from the feedback it's quite good that, you know, just listening and not being directly involved, but just listening, people are picking up stuff that they can then reflect into their own application. So that's really, really good to hear, Graham.
Yeah. And I know everyone else in the ClearAdmit office is happy that you and I do this each week so that we don't, you know, talk to them all the time. So at least we're, you know, putting the advice out there for others to hear who can benefit from it. So in all seriousness, no, it's great to have those reviews. Please keep them coming. It allows us to get sponsors and to basically continue to do this podcast. And speaking of sponsors, our current sponsor is Bain & Company. And I wanted to once again encourage everyone to check out Bain & Company's new podcast, which is called Beyond the Bio. Keith Bevins, who's the head of consultant recruiting, sits down with extraordinary Bain people to get insight into deep questions like, how does a former teacher continue to pursue her passion for education at the firm? And why did a successful startup founder return to Bain years after leaving? So subscribe to Beyond the Bio in the link in our episode page for this episode so you can find it. Again, I mentioned last week, I've listened to a couple of episodes now. Definitely worth tuning into, a lot of fun. And we like Keith, who's the host. He's been on our show too. So Alex, let's dive in though, because I know we're rambling on here and I know everyone wants to hear who we're going to feature this week in Wiretap. So you have selected two applicants who needed advice on their candidacy and then one candidate who's already got some decisions in hand and wants our input on where to go. So let's move on and look at Wiretap's candidate number one. So this candidate is applying to Berkeley, Michigan, MIT, Stanford, Darden, and Yale, and hoping to start next fall. The pre-MBA kind of career experience has been in the education domain, and this person's hoping to get into consulting or nonprofit social impact type work. GRE score 325, GPA 3.23, 5 years of work experience, located in New York City. And this person has taught middle school science for 3 years, but then became a product manager for an ed tech company. So an interesting mix there. You had some dialogue with this candidate. What do you make of their odds here? I mean, they have a nice selection of schools. What's your take on this candidate? We don't see that many teachers coming through on the wire, so it was interesting to see this.
Yeah, and oddly enough, I picked two teachers today for Wiretaps, and then when you were reading the Bain about the Bain podcast, they were talking about how a teacher can continue their interest. So entirely coincidental, I should say, but yeah, quite fortuitous, I suppose. I think there's some really cool things about this candidate, Graham, there's one sort of area of concern which the candidate is fully aware of, I think. I really like the fact that this person was a middle school teacher, science, for 3 years, and then became a product manager for an ed tech firm. So they've, you know, they stayed within the sort of the domain of interest, that's education, working as a product manager, which is the sort of role that, you know, frankly, you know, people going to get an MBA, you know, a number of people are seeking. So they've sort of, I guess in my mind, straddled two universes before embarking on the MBA, which is very good. And, you know, again, and I've talked about this a little bit before with candidates, this is the type of candidate, as is the next candidate we will be featuring today. This is the type of candidate that I think ADCOM is going to be rooting for, because they bring a different perspective, coming from education, educational background. So I think that's all good. They also, I quizzed them a little bit about their extracurricular activities, and they talked about being is it a professional singer or a classically trained singer? Whatever it was, it sounded very interesting. Classically trained singer, and I do that with a couple of different organizations through the city. So that's I think adds a different element, shows the person's quite well rounded, quite interesting. They do some community type work and so forth. It says I lead a DEI committee at work. Graham, do you know what that is? I wasn't able to look that up before we came on air.
You know, I actually was curious about it, because on the one hand they talk about wanting to do where is it? They talked about wanting to do human-centric design. So I was like, oh, is that a design thing? But I think it might be diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I think it's unrelated to their comment about human-centric design. I agree with you. Like, I love the fact that they're a teacher, that they're a singer, that they're active in their community, they're, you know, and in the workplace, you know, with the diversity, equity, inclusion initiatives and things. But what I liked most, to be frank, is that they'd already made that pivot from teaching into kind of the business world. Because I think when an ADCOM sees a candidate who's non-traditional, an actor, a singer, a teacher, whatever it might be, someone who's coming from a different path, they like it, but they also sometimes worry about, will this person fit in? Will they be able to kind of get up to speed and survive the kind of, you know, MBA program, because it can be challenging and just sort of new subject matter, right? And then will companies want to bring that person in, or will they kind of wonder? So I think the fact they've made that transition ahead of the MBA is really helpful. So as you say, I think they're going to be rooting for this person big time. The GPA is low though, right? 3.23. And the GRE is good though. It's 325. I mean, it's not at the level that, like, I think Stanford's average is more like 329, which might be the highest one out there. But 325 is right around the average at many of the top schools on their list. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you think they need to do anything? You know, you mentioned additional coursework, or, you know, did they? Is that something that they're addressing, or is just kind of they're going to write an explanatory essay or something?
Basically, their GPA is something I'm worried about. However, I'll be writing an extenuating circumstances surrounding it. So there are circumstances surrounding this GPA, so address it reasonably succinctly. The key here is, and this is for sort of anyone that has any issues related to sort of their academic record, they need to obviously demonstrate two things. One, that they're academically qualified and will do well in the curriculum in the MBA. And secondly, that they're academically motivated to do well, because someone that's smart could still, you know, coast along and not get involved in the curriculum and so on and so forth. So they've got to overcome those two issues and use this sort of explanation, I suppose, for the extenuating circumstance. If the extenuating circumstance is simply that they were super, super busy in their undergraduate, you know, leading clubs and doing a variety of other things, that really doesn't cut it, simply because when we're admitting people into the MBA program, we also want you to be super busy, whether it's recruiting, whether it's leading clubs and developing conferences and just doing a whole bunch of other stuff. So time management and time balance in the MBA program is going to be super critical. So I truly hope that this candidate can overcome this slightly lower GPA. It's not disastrous. You know, it's 3.23. It's a little lower. It's not out of the ballpark. But I really hope they can overcome this, because, as you say, the fact that they've already switched into a product management role, I think is really going to play a big positive in their candidacy. In terms of their school selection, Graham, what are you thinking there? I mean, obviously Stanford and Sloan at one end, you know, at the sort of the top end of the range, Haas, Ross, or Haas, Yale, Ross and Darden. I suppose I shouldn't put them in order because we get criticised a little bit for our tiered system. But there seems to be a decent spread of schools there, Graham.
Yeah, no, it's a good range. I guess, you know, one of the things is that the goal, it seems, is to go into, you know, product management for an ed tech company. Or no, that's what she's doing now. But she has a goal here somewhere, and it's to do...
Yeah, well, it's going social impact consulting.
That's right.
Leading human-centric design projects, which, again, that sounds quite a glamorous label. What is a human-centric design project other than a project that's designed to be, I don't know, accessible for us?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's there's some lingo there, but I think it's about, you know, using design thinking and... building products and services from the customer out, you know, as opposed to, you know, deciding what you think the customer wants. But
quite frankly, Graham, that's what all projects should be in this
right,
day and
exactly.
age of
yes,
whatever.
Of course.
So my point is, I think sometimes you can get a little over indulgent with the labels. I mean,
yeah, and that's actually a really good point, right? Because when this person writes the essays and things, I think it'll make a lot of sense to. Yeah, steer clear of too much lingo. Spell things out. Assume that your, you know, admissions reader is well educated, but not well versed in whatever language, you know, that sort of the jargon of your industry and things. But yeah, I guess it would have been helpful for me to have a better handle on the goals. I mean, I understand, you know, so consulting or nonprofit social impact. So if it's just MBB, then, you know, clearly all these schools are great. They all place lots of people and. It shouldn't really matter. I mean, the person didn't signal a post-MBA desired landing place. So, but yeah, this is a good batch of schools. And as you said, with a range of admissions difficulty. And again, I think this person will get in, but I just encourage them to do a good job of spelling out the goals and showing the impact they've had and that transition they made from kind of the teaching world to the business world. And, you know, to suggest that they're really ready to contribute and be a part of an MBA program.
Yeah, and hopefully in this current role as a product manager, they can show their impact. There's metrics that illustrate, you know, the impact of the work that they've undertaken. That obviously would play very well in their admissions stories.
Agreed. All right, so shall we move on to the next candidate here?
Yes.
All right, let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this candidate also wants to start next fall. Is applying to Berkeley, Georgetown, U Washington, Foster, UCLA, UT, Austin, and Yale. And this person is also in the education domain and is hoping to work in nonprofit and social impact after business school. The GRE is a 3.21 and the GPA is a 3.56. 4 years of work experience to date. This person is in LA and hopes to stay West Coast after business school. And they are applying through the consortium. And for those of our listeners who don't know, the consortium is a consortium of schools that have come together and basically have a single application for minority candidates. And you know what's great about it is that as a candidate, you can, you know, basically kill a whole bunch of birds with one stone. You fill out one application, and then all the schools in the consortium, or you can pick the ones that you're, you know, targeting and such. But there are a whole number that take part. What is also interesting, though, is that it's basically schools kind of outside of the M7. So it's sort of schools, let's say, 8 through 20 or so that take part in it for one reason or another. I don't know the politics or the history of it all in terms of what determines which schools are in the consortium. But at minimum, there's a whole bunch of schools available to people who want to just take this route. So that was the note that this person left. What do you make of this candidate and, you know, the school selection? I think somewhere he or she did offer the insight that they've been teaching for all 4 years. So what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, so I'll push this directly back to you, Graham, not to get off this. But clearly in the last candidate, we suggested that it was a really good thing that they actually have some experience in ed tech as a product manager. This in this case, this person has taught for 4 years and is now planning to go to business school. So what sort of hurdles or what sort of things should this candidate be looking out for to make sure that they can maximize their opportunity in their applications?
Yeah, I mean, because I do think that, like we said with the other candidate, you know, it's always a little bit of a challenge to come from a completely non-traditional path. Now, as you said earlier, I think candidates, admissions officers root for these types of candidates, you know, and clearly GPA is great. The work experience sounds interesting. And the candidate actually pointed out that test scores have improved while he or she has been, you know, kind of teaching at the school. So I think they have some accomplishments and they can point to, I mean, in my mind, managing a classroom of 20 or 40 or however many kids is a real interesting kind of managerial and leadership challenge. So I think you can, it's just going to be incumbent on this candidate to actually demonstrate, you know, the kind of business type skills, leadership, teamwork, you know, that are going into kind of running a classroom. And I also think it's really important for a candidate like this to demonstrate an understanding of, you know, what they want to learn in business school and what they're going to do. So, you know, they indicated that, that they want to go work for a company like Amazon in the corporate social responsibility division, and in the longer term, direct a nonprofit focused on improving education domestically. So that's a good start. I think it'd just be useful for me to know, like, what exactly might this candidate envision doing at Amazon in the corporate social responsibility division, and what skills is business school going to impart that they'll use in that role? And then how does that get them to setting up their own nonprofit? I guess I was, I think both goals sound interesting, short and long term, but I just wanted to understand how one makes that leap. I think overall, it's an interesting candidate. There's just going to be that's definitely a challenge, is to demonstrate kind of business school readiness. And I think the GPA is great. The GRE is a little on the lower side. I mean, not for all of the schools, but it's definitely low for, you know, say Berkeley or, you know, some of the sort of top ranked schools on the list here.
I agree. And I think in the case of this candidate, having developed goals, real firm goals, and the fact that this candidate wants to return ultimately to improve the sort of education space domestically through their own business or whatever it is, or a non-profit, is smart in terms of an application strategy, and hopefully it's a real goal that the person is passionate about. But it sort of plays off of their prior experiences, which is very important. So showing that they're planning to return to the education space in the long run, in the short run, you know, going to a sort of big corporation, working in corporate social responsibility, maybe with a focus on education, would be also very smart. And it shows that they mean business getting the MBA, they understand why they're getting the MBA, and so on and so forth. So I do think all that stuff is very good. The other thing about this candidate is, as you pointed out, that they are a consortium applicant. So I assume that means they're an underrepresented minority. So it might be, you know, worth infusing in their stories, you know, how being an underrepresented minority has sort of challenged them in the workplace, or how they've become a mentor. And I think they've suggested that they are a mentor in as part of their extracurriculars, how that plays out in terms of supporting other potentially underrepresented minorities, if that's their role as a mentor. But I also want to make sure, and I think the consortium is fantastic organization for supporting underrepresented minorities through the application process. But as you pointed out, if they're only applying to consortium schools, they may be limiting their opportunities a little bit to make sure that this person considers, I think, maybe even one or two M7 programs, slightly higher up in the order. I mean, and again, when you're applying to business school, if you don't get denied by at least a program or two, you have to wonder, did you reach high enough in terms of your target program? So I would like to see this candidate consider, you know, the likes of whether it's Kellogg or Chicago or Wharton or Stanford or whatever it might be, and really push themselves with at least one or two applications.
I mean, I have two thoughts on this candidate related to what you were saying. So I think, number one, in order for their candidacy to be a success, I think, you know, it is going to be important for them to very effectively convey in the consortium application why they need the MBA. And they mention, oh, the MBA will allow me to network, learn, and experience different functions and industries. But I think they're going to need to do a little more than that sort of general thing. And I actually would steer clear of talking about networking as a main feature. I think it's probably more important to talk about what they're going to learn and how they're going to get involved and what getting involved might mean for their own development. But you know, as to the consortium versus maybe applying to some additional schools, I do agree. I mean, I think, you know, they might run the table here. I mean, their numbers are okay. GRE is a little low, and I did wonder what the breakdown was on the GRE. So for example, if this person is a teacher who studied, you know, education or English or a kind of, let's say, humanities or soft skill stuff in undergraduate, and if the GRE is really weak on the math side, that might be a little bit of a red flag for me. So I think it's unclear as to how well they're going to do. And, you know, but let's assume they have a great story. They're able to articulate their goals well and what they want out of business school. And that the GRE is fairly balanced or something, they might run the table with, you know, the schools they have here, which would then, as you say, leave them wondering, wow, did I aim high enough, or are there other schools? Now, they do want to stay on the West Coast. So obviously one that comes to mind is Stanford. But you could argue that, well, you know, maybe the numbers, maybe the GRE is not high enough, but you never know if you don't apply. And I mean, Stanford also has some pretty interesting stuff happening, you know, on the education side of things, too, if that's going to be a passion for this candidate. So that's one. The other one I thought of right away was Wharton, because of their semester in San Francisco option on the Wharton campus in San Francisco, given that this person wants to end up on the West Coast, you know, networking out there might be smart. And so, yeah, those were two that came to my mind. But I, again, you know, it depends. We don't have all the pieces of the puzzle here. But I do, you know, obviously appreciate this person posting, and I'm sure they're going to find success. But I just want to make sure, especially as they head into interviews and everything else, that they have their story, you know, really straight and you know, are being compelling about what they're going to do with their career and why they need the MBA to get there.
Yeah, no, I think very fair points, Graham.
All right, so let's move on. Now we're going to move on to a DecisionWire candidate. So this is Wiretap's candidate number three. So this person is undecided about where to go to business school. They've been admitted to INSEAD with a scholarship. They did not, I don't believe, offer up the amount, but they've got a scholarship. I don't think it's gigantic, but they have a scholarship. They also applied to Dartmouth, where they have been waitlisted, and they applied to Kellogg, where they were denied without an interview, and they also applied to UCLA. They don't mention the outcome there, but I guess they're kind of focusing at this point on INSEAD and the Tuck waitlist. They're going to start school next fall. They want to get into consulting, and they want to work for Bain, BCG, or McKinsey. GMAT score 710, GPA 2.95, and they're located in the UAE. This person is an American citizen, but it sounds like their, you know, thus far their work experience post college has been all international. They lived in four different countries. They mentioned that Tuck was their number one school. And yeah, so what do you make of this? I mean, they're on the waitlist at Tuck, but they're in at INSEAD, and they were kind of looking for guidance as to what we think, given their goals and desire to work in the U.S. after business school.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting candidate. They are actually on the waitlist at Anderson also. And the reason why I selected this candidate from actually quite a lot of posts on DecisionWire, which is, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, fantastic, is this whole idea of should they go to INSEAD, which is, you know, clearly, you know, I think Financial Times places it number one in their global rankings. We know it's at the very top tier of European-based business schools versus a program like Tuck, although they're on the wait list, so it's, you know, we're sort of you know, being a bit hopeful here at this point. You know, is Tuck a better option than INSEAD? Is INSEAD a better option than Tuck? Many would argue INSEAD's the better option anyway. It's great for consulting and so forth, even though Tuck is also renowned for its consulting program. But, you know, again, you know, if you look at many sort of the international rankings, you'd be placing INSEAD over Tuck 9 times out of 10. But the factor that makes it very interesting for this candidate is that they are wanting to work in the US post-MBA. And whilst I think INSEAD can enable them to do that, I think Tuck would enable potentially more opportunities and provide more access potentially to a career, even if it's just in the short term, a career directly out of the MBA program in the US. So from that standpoint, it really sort of highlights the importance of a geographic goal. If your goal is to be in a certain part of the world post-MBA, then you really want to be examining the alumni networks in those parts of that world, in those parts of the world post-MBA. And it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, because a school is higher ranked in a sort of in a national ranking, that they're necessarily better positioned to place you in a certain part of the world. And some would argue, well, actually, well, INSEAD can place people in the States, and I know that they can. But, you know, this candidate has lots of interesting, I think, international experience, but none of it's based in the US. They're also trying to transition from a sort of an engineering background into consulting. So I think that's a little bit of an additional challenge. And, you know, that then brings into play, should the candidate be looking at the one-year option of INSEAD, or a two-year option where they have an opportunity or better opportunities to intern to help sort of, you know, allow for that that transition. And then it always, you know, when someone says, you know, INSEAD was my number one choice at the beginning of the process, I think that also should play a role in the decision making, right?
Right. So they said Tuck.
I'm sorry, Tuck. Yeah, and I'm looking at Tuck when I said that. So dialing all those things in, I do think the candidate's going to need to deposit at INSEAD because that's their only option at this point. But I do think that they should work the waitlist at Tuck. To the extent that they can, to see if they can then get that option too, and then they get to make their final choice. And I suggested to the candidate that if they really want Tuck, they haven't visited Hanover, and we know, Graham, that a visit is quite important in this process, as certainly a program like Tuck, which is a reasonably remote program, is very, you know, it's quite an unusual experience. It's a fantastic experience for the right people. And I think visiting not only sends a strong signal to the admissions committee that you're serious about the program, but it can also, you know, reinforce or alter your a candidate's perception of whether Tuck should be their number one choice. They suggested that they're probably not going to be able to visit while June, but I think, you know, if they're really serious about Tuck and getting off the wait list and wanting to go there, they need to bring that visit forward and get to campus.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. So the first thing I think we need to talk about is, and I'll be brief because I know we're up against it here. We got holiday celebrations to get to and things, right? But it's the first thing is, what's the likelihood of them getting in off the wait list at Tuck? I mean, as you said, Tuck was their number one choice going into this process, and so they probably owe it to themselves to at least put themselves on the wait list and fight for a spot. But I do worry a little bit about, you know, 710 GMAT with a 67th percent on the math, as they report here, and then a 2.95 GPA. So those are hurdles. It doesn't sound like they're willing to retake the test, but they are taking MBA math, which I believe, if my memory serves, was actually founded by a professor, or I feel like the guy's affiliated to Tuck in some way, if memory serves. So doing MBA math is great. That'll help. Even if they don't go to Tuck, it'll be a great exercise to get ready for business school. And for our listeners who don't know, I think MBA math is basically just an online course that you can take to, you know, basically bolster your skills heading into business school with things like spreadsheets and accounting and math and things like that. So I think, yeah, they may face an uphill challenge in getting in off the list, but I agree, like showing up, nothing like showing up in Hanover and maybe get, you know, sitting down with some students or seeing if someone in the admissions office would be willing to take a few minutes, given that they're coming from the UAE. So that would be great. But the second thing that, as you rightly point out, is like, how does one even measure INSEAD versus Tuck? I mean, I always kind of laugh at the rankings that sort of put all schools in the world together, because the truth is that, you know, for one, any one candidate going to school in Europe versus the US could mean really different things. And so the thing that stands out to me is that this person has said that they're kind of drawn to the 2-year experience and the chance to stretch out kind of their last chance to do so. They're 30. So they're like, wow, you know, this might be a nice, really like enriching and formational kind of experience for me. So having the 2 years, and as you point out, to transition careers. And so there's some benefits there. And the fact that they want to be in the U.S., you know, so I think for this candidate, it might make sense. You know, although INSEAD did just announced recently that they're opening a hub in San Francisco, I believe it is. So they are going to have more of a U.S. presence, and they are, you know, kings of consulting. I mean, they're placing so many people at all the top consulting firms every year, but most of them are, you know, they're not necessarily in the States, right? So it's this sort of conundrum where I think if you know you want to be in the U.S. and particularly long term, having a Dartmouth, Tuck, Ivy League, MBA on your resume and those 2 years to make a full transition may be of more value to this candidate in the long haul. If they want to stay in the Middle East or go to Asia, where INSEAD has just amazing reputation as well, or be in Europe, that's another thing though. So I think it really depends on the candidate. And so it's really hard. It's also, I just think personally, hard to compare two programs that are so different. I mean, I would say that about Cambridge versus Wharton or any kind of 1 year versus 2 year matchup. It's just always difficult, I think, to put them in the same bucket, even though many of the rankings attempt to do just that. So again, the good news here is that this candidate's been shortlisted for a scholarship at INSEAD. They made it into a top school with what are arguably kind of not super numbers, 710, 295, nothing jumping off the charts there. So I think they're really fortunate that they've got an offer and maybe even some scholarship money to go to a school as great as INSEAD. But I would argue that, you know, fighting it out on the waitlist for Tuck to see what happens there, it certainly can't hurt. And if that was their number one choice going in, they owe it to themselves, I think, to give it a shot and, you know, in light of their goals to kind of come to the U.S. So that's my take. Any other thoughts that you had on this one?
No, I mean, just the final thing, if they are going to go onto the waitlist at Tuck or push it, I hate to say it, but they might want to, you know, add a couple of round two apps in there to see if they can get some other U.S.-based opportunities. So, you know, you're looking at potentially top 16 programs that all place well in consulting as other options to apply. But yeah, I think, as you say, it's very difficult for us to make, you know, to offer concrete advice when these programs are so different, when they're based in very different geographies and so forth. But very interesting, and congratulations to this guy and to all the others that have been posting on DecisionWire.
Yeah, it's great to see all the results. And yeah, thanks to that person for posting. I did want to mention this is our last podcast for 2019. And so I wanted to wish everyone a really happy and healthy 2020. May your months be filled with positive admissions news and scholarship dollars and everything else, promotions at work, whatever you need to have a great year. We loved recording all the episodes we recorded in 2019. And Alex and I just really enjoy doing this. So great to have everyone, and just wanted to wish you all the best in 2020. Alex, thanks as always for picking out these profiles to review. We're going to do this next week. No rest for us, right? We'll be right back at it in 2020.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for all your time, and yeah, best wishes for a great 2020 to you as well.
Yeah, very good. Happy New Year, everybody, this week, and best of luck.
All right, sounds good. We'll see you all next week.